Welcome back to another episode of the DFD Performance Podcast. We are joined, third episode of the year. We took a little hiatus. It's been a little time in between drinks, but we've got Ryan Hassel, aka the Dojo Dietitian, back on to break down some science. So, Doge, welcome back on.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks for having me back on.
Go over what we're talking about today, Doge, because I feel like this is a question we get almost daily, and I feel like people who listen to this podcast are probably either going to be very, very appreciated to hear this standpoint and hear the scientific side of this, or it's going to infuriate them and we're going to get some pretty nasty messages. But let's introduce what we're talking about today.
Yeah, sure. I think you're exactly right. It is definitely the most common question that we get asked about. And like, we see it for new clients that come on board as well. Like people who have mixed levels of results. Some people will come to us being like, this completely ruined my training, or some people will be like, oh, this is really great for me. And it's the animal-based diet. So that's what we're going to be talking today, breaking down kind of like what the diet is, where it comes from, I guess why people gravitate to it in the first place. And then we'll have a look at like, where is the actual science at with it? How good is it for the things that it claims to be good at? And then I guess what can the listeners take away from it in terms of like, should they be using it? Should they not be using it? So I guess a good place to start with it is like, what is the animal-based diet? Because there's so much confusion and so many like different things floating around of like, you know, carnivore, animal-based diet, raw diet, like the Liver King one back in the day. There's all these crazy ones and they all seem to like come and go in and out. And I think the animal-based one is probably the least crazy sounding out of all of them. And it sort of takes a lot of principles from those more fringe diets, but it allows a little bit of like flexibility. And it's a bit more, I guess, sustainable for the average person. So what I mean is it's a diet that's primarily based around animal products. So eating like meats, dairy, eggs, all that kind of stuff, with the inclusion of specifically animal organs, because you're cutting out things like vegetables and grains, which come with a lot of nutrients and stuff that aren't found in like just the meat of the animal, but you can get some of them from these organs. So that's primarily what it is. So at its core, realistically, it's just an elimination diet. So you're eliminating these food groups, which is like grains and vegetables, and you're keeping in animal products and some fruits and things like honey and dairy. And yeah, I guess that's kind of the crux of it. What's your experience been, Geordie, with I guess clients that have come in, or how are you sort of hearing about this diet?
Yeah, a lot of new clients when they come in, I feel like there's two reasons that they get onto it. One is that they've scrolled on social media and they've seen certain influencers talk about it, and they tend to have a tendency to just try whatever diet is thrown in front of them. The other one is they tend to come from this more like inflammation standpoint, or, you know what, like I'm having troubles digesting certain foods. And like you said, they seem to have a fair decent amount of success. The guys that come in on the first type of attitude where they're just trying it because they've seen influencer X talk about it, probably don't have as much success with it, or don't like it as much, because there's not much rhyme behind the reason. The guys that come in with the inflammation, or what they perceive as inflammation, seem to have a bit of success. And it's like you said, it's mostly an elimination diet, isn't it? You're taking out so much that there's a good chance that they are removing the things that are inflaming their body or causing whatever intolerant reaction, or maybe even some type of inflammation in response to some type of food. That's generally my response with it. But it's always very interesting to talk to them and hear about why they go on it. That's something that's always fascinating. But there's a bit of research behind it. What have you found in the research for the motivation for why people jump on this animal-based diet?
Yeah, well, there actually was a pretty recent study. I think it was last year or within the last couple of years. I think Harvard did, it was just a survey, so it wasn't really like a full study or anything like that. They were just kind of gauging, because it had gained so much popularity, like why were people jumping on it? What were they hoping to get out of it? And I guess what their perceived benefits were. Like, it was, none of this was actually like measured in terms of like biomarkers, or like they weren't looking at bloods or anything like that. They were just like, why did you jump on it and how do you feel? I think the main reason was actually like weight loss. And I think that probably comes from a lot of, you hear people like Joe Rogan and stuff kind of like talking about it with some of these influencers, like the people that push it. And they'll be like, oh yeah, I have all these health benefits, but I also lost this amount of weight in this amount of time. And I think that was like the primary one that a lot of people jumped on for. But like you said, the inflammation side of things seems to be a big reason. Like people get really frustrated. They have whatever condition it is, whether it's like some inflammatory skin condition or like digestive issues, and they've tried everything else and nothing works. And they hear that there's like this miracle cure, which is the carnivore diet, animal-based diet, whatever it is. And they hear like their favorite influencer talking about how it helped them with those problems. And then they try it out. And the thing is, like a lot of people from the survey self-reported that it was helping with those symptoms. So there does seem to be something there when it comes to these inflammatory, I guess, responses that they're having. But there's no real reason that's been identified for why that is. But what's most likely the case is probably that it's like some of the listeners might have heard of these things. We're probably more familiar with them. Like we've heard it thrown around at uni a lot. Diets like, low FODMAP, those sort of ones where it's like a systematic removal of certain food groups. But the difference between those sort of diets and these ones is this is like you're eliminating everything that could be causing these potential triggers for your inflammation by doing these like animal-based or carnivore-based diets. But on like a low FODMAP diet, on the other hand, you eliminate all those foods, but then you systematically reintroduce them so that you're testing which ones are causing those triggers and you can keep those ones out, but you're still trying to get as much like diversity in your diet as possible. Whereas these ones, it's kind of just a permanent elimination. So once you've cut your grains and veggies out, you're just sticking to like meat and fruit and stuff. And while that might be good for reducing the inflammation in the short term, now all of a sudden you have to make up for all the nutrients and stuff that you're losing by cutting out these entire food groups. So that's like, yeah, sorry, in a nutshell, that's kind of like the main reasons why we see it happen. But as you can see, there are other ways that are out there in order to get those same effects. Another reason, which is starting to lean more into like fringe ideas about these diets, and I know you probably noticed this as well, that like no offense to anyone that's out there that's kind of like trying to follow this stuff, but there does seem to be leaning into a little bit of more, I guess, like conspiratorial ideas around diets and like chemicals that are in the food or whatever that they're trying to eliminate by going onto these diets. And some of the bigger ones around that are things like lectins, and certain nutrients or anti-nutrients that are found in these vegetable foods that are considered to be like potentially dangerous. But all of the, I guess, information around that is mostly like theories, right? So there's no real hard evidence showing that any of these nutrients or anti-nutrients are unhealthy in humans. It just seems to be at this stage based on like animal studies, like mice models, things like that, which are really cool. Like you can see these like I guess mechanisms happen in like a cell culture or in an animal and be like, whoa, that's a really cool theory. But translating that from a small sort of system to a human is like a completely different ball game. And a lot of these things just don't show up in human studies. So but those are the kind of the main reasons why people are getting onto it. Now, when it comes to the benefits, like obviously we've both talked about some of the people that go through seem to notice some benefit to these diets. What's your experience been with that, I guess, at this stage?
Yeah, the biggest one, and I feel like it's the same benefit that you get with most diets, right? Is it comes back to that elimination aspect of it. Not so much with the triggers, like absolutely that is a component, but just the overall calories, right? Most of the guys that I've seen and consulted with, where they come to me and they go, "Hey, Geordie, I feel really good. My mood's better, my energy's better. Like I feel really good throughout the day." And I look at the diet they were eating before, and then I look at their, quote unquote, animal-based diet. And I just think, like, you're calling this an animal-based diet, but what you've really done is just removed all the crap out of your diet. And you've gone back to the fundamental principles that a vegan diet preaches, that any other type of diet preaches, is that you get rid of most of the processed food, you include mostly whole food, you have a good amount of protein. and you drink, you know, all your water and you have some structure. And most importantly, you eat an appropriate amount of food, which a lot of people do not do. And that, like you said earlier, Dojo, tends to lean to these guys going towards weight loss. And when they go towards weight loss and achieve weight loss, you generally see all of these other health benefits. So we tend to associate, hey, you know what, I went on this diet and it was this diet specifically that gave me all these benefits. When you dig into it, and you look into it a bit more, it's like, well, you could have got those benefits any which way, any diet that you went from, as long as you just achieve this, which is usually the weight loss. And I see that because they remove all the crappy processed foods. Is that a similar experience to what you get with these guys?
Yeah, I think so. No, it definitely is. And I think it's just like, it's a simple cookie cutter approach to restricting your diet, right? Because you know, okay, all of these certain foods are going to be now bad for me. So now I'm going to like avoid them. And that generally includes whether it's carnivore, whether it's animal-based, whether it's like vegan, whatever restrictive diet you're on, a lot of the time the foods that you're restricting out of the diet are going to be the high processed ones that are high in calories, lower in nutrients and stuff like that. And just as a result of following the diet, it's going to be harder for you to overconsume calories. And so you'll probably just lose weight sort of passively without having to think about it. And I guess that's like, that's kind of a net positive for these type of diets, right? As they do encourage the consumption of whole foods, lean meats, that kind of stuff, which in general does end up being good for the people that follow them, because they are losing weight and they get all the associated health benefits with that. So, you know, like improved insulin sensitivity, lower risk of all sort of diseases and everything that comes with it. So like it actually does end up being a positive thing. But like you said, it could be imitated with any sort of diet that makes you cut out junk food basically and end up losing weight. Now I guess like that basically covers most of the benefit, right? Because we've talked about like the elimination of particular triggers, but then also just the elimination of high cal foods. Now I guess from your experience, what have you seen, like, you know, working with athletes and in those particular populations, where do you see I guess the downfalls or potential risks of following an animal-based diet or something similar?
The biggest downside I found, and this is with the athletes, when they come in and they do it, and we generally see all the benefits we just said, they lose a bit of weight, they clean up their diet, they eat generally more whole foods. But what comes with that is that they take away a lot of the calories and the fuel sources for their training. And it's the number one complaint that we get with these guys. They go, yeah, like my training is really suffering. I'm really struggling with these longer sessions and I'm really struggling with the harder sessions. And then when we dive into it, it's because they're probably not eating as many carbohydrates. They may have the carbohydrates in there, but because it's not a big focus of the diet, they're eating inadequate carbohydrates and they're too afraid because of the rules and the restrictions of the animal-based diet to include other foods like faster digesting carbs that may be more processed, which we know are very beneficial for these athletes, particularly if you're cranking out 2, 3, 4 hours of training a day, and then you're training multiple times a day and burning loads of calories. Those things are so advantageous for your training performance. And it's the first thing that we see and the biggest complaint. A lot of the guys that come in that I talk to that have gone onto a carnivore animal-based diet, that's the biggest complaint. Hey, how can I do this diet and how can I still fuel my training? Which I guess brings us to the point when carnivore is very restrictive and it takes away a lot of these carbohydrates. Animal-based diet allows a bit more of these carbohydrates, but I feel it's that mindset and the thinking and the restriction that is what's limiting them, because they know that they now have a bit of freedom to have the carbohydrates, but they don't want to break any of these rules. So they don't really commit to fully fueling themselves properly, and their training and their performance suffers because of it.
Yeah. And when you think about it, like the types of carbs that they're allowed to have, like things like fruit and stuff, they're great for carbohydrates, but they're still not super energy dense. Like you'd still have to eat a huge amount of fruit to be able to fuel the same amount of training that you would be able to get from like a small amount of rice or potatoes or stuff like that. Just the volume difference is massive. And like, obviously this is a specific situation where athletes, their energy requirements are going to be way higher than an everyday person that works in an office. So it is, I guess, like a little bit specific, but I guess I think one thing you kind of touched on there, which is really important. And one thing I guess is a massive problem. It's not really talked about enough in like the context of these restrictive diets is how they impact your relationship with food and being like, oh, I have to cut this food out. So is this other one okay to eat? Or like what ends up happening, and I've had this with a few clients, is they come in and they just I can't eat bread. Like I'm too scared. If I eat it, I'm gonna put on like 2 kilos from like one slice of bread or something like that. And it sounds kind of crazy listening in, but I'm sure some listeners have genuinely had that thought. Like it creates this massive fear around certain types of foods that just doesn't need to be there. And oftentimes a lot of these foods are actually going to be more beneficial than negative, especially if you're training, if you're doing a lot of physical activity. And in populations, especially in like weight category sports where they're starting to worry more about weight now, obviously there is going to be issues of like body image and that kind of stuff too. Once you start opening the door to restrictive eating, you start opening the door to like it's kind of a Pandora's box to a lot of negative spirals around thinking about food and eating and weight and all of that kind of stuff. And it can lead to some really dangerous things that we kind of on our end we see a lot more of. So I guess it doesn't probably come across as an important idea to maybe people that aren't around that all the time. But yeah, I think the impact on relationship with food can be insane.
Yeah, and that has a flow-on effect, right? Because like you said, when you start dipping your toes in the water where you start subjecting food to this is good and bad, which is fair and warranted. I do agree that some foods are good and bad for certain situations. Inherently, it's a much different discussion. And I don't like it when these type of diets promote that this food's in completely and this food's out completely, because then you have this mindset of ethos that that food has absolutely no warrant in a healthy diet, which for the most part is not true. And there's good studies, right? And there's a study that we dug into here, the Lion Heart study. I'd love for you to explain that, because what this study showed is quite counterintuitive to the ethos of the carnivore and the animal-based diet.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess a lot of the concerns with these diets and a lot of the things that they're trying to eliminate, as I said, they are kind of based on these lab studies or theories about what foods are going to be healthy and unhealthy. And like theoretically, they might make sense in that closed system in the cell model or in the mice model. But when you have these foods in a human, they generally tend to still end up being really healthy. So that example there, the Lion Heart study, is one of the more significant ones when it comes to like nutrition research. It's one of the better controlled studies out there. There's a massive group, 500 participants, and it's one we all kind of learned about at uni, right? Because they had such a significant outcome from this study where they were essentially separating the participants into two groups. One of them followed a Mediterranean diet, and I'll explain what that means in a second. One basically just got no advice, and they planned to run this study for, I think it was like 5 years. They had to cut it early. The ethics people in charge of the study had to cut the study short because the positive outcomes for the people following the Mediterranean diet in terms of heart risk, so things like dying from a heart attack, but also things like non-fatal heart attacks, so things like stroke and heart attacks that didn't end up in the with the people dying, were up to 50 to like the risk of that happening was up to 50 to 70% lower in the group that was following the Mediterranean diet than the other group, like before the study even had time to run its course. They were like, this is so significant that we have to, it's unethical for us to keep this going without telling the other population how beneficial this is. And if you look at the foods that were included in that Mediterranean style group, the main foods that they were increasing were things like grains, breads, root vegetables, green vegetables, things like replacing one of the main changes they did was they replaced a lot of the saturated fat in these people's diets with margarine, olive oil, and canola oil, which are these oils are usually, I mean, olive oil is sometimes okay within some of these communities, but for the most part, things like canola oil, they're like never eat it. It's got like if it's got canola oil in it, it's toxic or whatever, it's a seed oil. These foods that were increased in these groups were found to be so beneficial that they literally had to cut the study short because they were so protective against these heart conditions. So it just really shows the difference between like having these theories about why things are like certain nutrients and things are bad in a closed system. But when you look at the human model, humans are such complex, I guess, systems where we don't fully understand how a lot of these nutrients work within the body yet, but when we look at it over large groups over long amounts of time, we can see that the net impact of eating these foods and including them in the diet ends up being really, really positive. So, as much as like some of these theories sound really interesting and exciting and like maybe cutting these foods out of my diet will make me lose all this weight and be super healthy, if you look at the actual evidence of what we've seen from outcome studies where we look at what actually happens to humans when they follow these diets, the overall impact of including these sort of foods in the diet ends up being healthy.
Yeah, that's a very important point. I think another point that's important to go over is this idea of confounding factors, which is important when we talk about nutrition research, because you could take, let's just say, an extremely healthy individual, and let's define healthy as someone who has a BMI, and you can jump up and down about BMI as much as you want. Let's just say a BMI of 22, they've got an appropriate bone mineral density, they've got appropriate amount of muscle mass, they participate in cardiovascular training 3 times a week, they participate in resistance training 3+ times a week. They eat a diet that is mostly whole foods most of the time, drink all their water. They're what we would consider pretty healthy. Their biomarkers are really good. There's nothing that stands out. That type of person could go on any of these diets, really, and still be healthy. Where this conversation gets interesting is when we take a quote unquote unhealthy person and we're trying to rectify the unhealthiness of that person. And this is where it gets very muddy and the waters get hard to distinguish because of all these confounding factors. So you could take a very obese person with a very high BMI and say that's correlated as well with all these negative biomarkers, increased cholesterol, increased insulin resistance, maybe there's diabetes or whatever else is in there. Then you get into this question of, okay, which one of these diets are going to have the most impact on them? And it gets very difficult because that's when it's hard to say, okay, well, is a vegan diet going to be better than an animal-based diet, or is it going to be better than, when realistically, the biggest problems here are probably not going to be solved with the diet just alone. It's a very holistic thing. And that's what we keep seeing in this research is whatever diet we can get on these guys to control their overall caloric intake, which means that they're going to lose weight. And we know if we lose weight, all these other biomarkers will hopefully and probably correct themselves. And if we can get these guys out doing, say, more cardiovascular and resistance type training, where we can increase their heart rate up to a certain amount for a certain period of time and then increase their muscle mass, that is going to have a net benefit on their overall health. But we never talk about all of this when we go, okay, we just want to do a carnivore diet with this extremely unhealthy person. Is that going to fix it? Probably not. It's probably not going to be the diet, but maybe that diet is the trigger for them to lose all this weight and to get more active and to change their mindset towards food. And people get really, really, really attached to the diet itself. And I think that's something that makes this conversation very difficult, because there's going to be people listening to this going, oh my God, I can't believe you guys are freaking saying that this isn't the best diet ever. It's the best. It helped me so much, and it helped my brother, and it helped my friend, and blah, blah. It's like, that's cool, but at the end of the day, the diet was just one component of this bigger system, and we need to appreciate that system. And it's easy for me and Dojo to sit back because we've seen this with thousands and thousands of people. So the data set that we're looking at that we've personally dealt with is humongous, where the data set that unfortunately that you're probably dealing with is yourself, Karen from accounts, and then maybe your cousin. And it doesn't represent the whole. And it's an important consideration because you need to think about your nutrition like that. It's very, very rare. And we haven't found, I don't know, Dojo, maybe you disagree, but I had doubt you do. We haven't found the silver bullet and the silver lining where we can go, hey, we can take unhealthy person B over here and just give them this diet and they don't have to do anything else. They don't have to do the exercise. They don't have to sleep more. They don't have to lift weights and get moving. They just eat this diet and boom, everything fixes. That just doesn't happen. More so what we see when we look at these human trials, like Dojo's talking, not mechanistic, simplified, singled out physiological mechanistic systems that we see in mice and animal rodent studies and whatever, when we see these long-term human studies and human trials, which is our best that we have in the field of nutrition, we tend to see that it is these principles that people follow over time that lead to these better health outcomes. Can you control your calories? Can you manage your weight? Can you include cardiovascular training or cardiovascular output? Can you increase your muscle mass by doing resistance training? Can you get regular sunlight? Can you increase your water intake? If you can do these things over a set period of time, we tend to see better correlation with more healthier health outcomes.
Yeah, I think that's honestly like a great summary for it's people just get too caught up in the weeds of like particular nutrients or particular diets, but realistically it's a whole like life picture. As you said, everything like relationship with friends, diet, activity levels, everything plays a part in your overall health. And I think getting too hyper focused on one particular diet or one particular diet pattern or cutting out particular foods, you're really just probably not getting the bang for your buck in terms of like mental energy, and you're probably hurting yourself more than you're benefiting yourself just through having all this added stress about food and stuff, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people will come back with the argument of, and you always get this argument, but it works so well for me, and it's like that's awesome, and it's amazing that it did work for you, and I'm very happy when people come to us and they say, hey, the animal-based diet worked really well for me, and you need to appreciate that the diet is so much more. It probably worked for you because the diet as a whole and the community that is based around that diet fits in with your personalities, your ideologies, your stance on a lot of different issues and whatever else. That's why you see there's, and you don't want to generalize, but you generally can. Like when you look at a vegan community, a lot of them share the same ideologies and the same views and the same values. That when you look at the animal-based community, the exact same. When you look at groups of athletes, they don't generally fall into certain categories of, within different sports, you know, MMA community, you can generally bucket them into one type compared to, say, a tennis community or a golf community. It's just the way that human beings are. And that's why these diets are interesting, because they're both positive and negative in the fact that they give people maybe that catalyst that allows them to find this thing that makes them be healthier. And that's an amazing thing. It's just a very slippery and difficult conversation to have with them and trying to convince them that, hey, maybe that doesn't apply to everyone. And I'm glad that this worked for you and you found your people and you found something you're very passionate about and a style of eating and a lifestyle that fits perfectly with who you are. But that's probably, at least from the seat that we're sitting in, where we've dealt with thousands of people and looking at the body of research, that's probably not going to apply to everyone else. And then when you get really heavy on preaching that to everyone else and saying, hey, this is the way to go, that's where you get issues. Because not only are you conflicting with their lifestyle and maybe their views and morals and ethics, but then you're quite literally conflicting with their health, because maybe that style of eating is going to conflict some genetic condition that they have or some other condition that it might make it worse if they go on that type of diet, even though overall the diet could be considered healthy for you.
It's really interesting. Like that's such a good point that like if it works for you, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work for everyone, because a lot of the benefits that we see from these type of diets, you can still see them from like a vegan diet, which is the complete opposite, right? But like it a lot of the times what happens when someone jumps on one of these diets is they start like if say it's like an average everyday person, they're taking more health focused, more of a health focus now. So they're probably also going to be exercising. They're probably also going to be getting outside more. They're probably going to be doing all of these other things that could be helping. But in their mind, the one thing that they changed was, oh, I just did the carnivore diet and now I feel better, right? And then so that's what caused it. But there's all these other things going on around it that have led to improvements. But those improvements could come from following one of any other type of diet. And like you said, everyone is going to be different in terms of like having genetic variability and all that kind of stuff. So some diets might actually work better for some people and others for others. But like you said, just because it just works for one person or doing this one thing worked for you literally doesn't mean that it's going to work for everyone. And that's why we have to fall back on these larger studies that have these outcome results, because we know, okay, over a big group of people, doing this led to this positive outcome. So we can say for most people, this is probably going to be beneficial.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to finish this up on. So if you are someone that's listening to this, I don't want you guys to think that we're coming after. I quite like the animal diet, to be honest. Like the animal-based diet, I think shares a lot of great principles in the same way that I really like the vegan diet and that I think it shares a lot of great principles. Would I personally follow either of those diets? No, I wouldn't, but I do love the principles and I do follow the principles in the diet that I follow. And I'm sure you agree with that, Dojo. So I think it's important when you're looking at nutrition, and especially when you're scrolling social media, you can absolutely have your own opinion on anything you want. You have every single right to do that. When you're imparting information onto other people and it concerns their health, like health is the most important thing that you can have, and the most important, it's the only thing that's really important to us. You can have a million problems in the world until you get sick, and then you have one problem, and that's your health. This is where this conversation gets a bit dicey. And I think this is where conversations like this are so important because you need to be able to sit back and take away a lot of the subjective feelings that come with dieting. And you can't deny that there's subjectiveness that comes because it's so attached to our identity, our ideology, our morals and values and everything else. And you need to be able to look at it a bit more objectively. So conversations like this are really important. If you like the animal-based diet, power to you. That's awesome that you found your thing. If you don't, then maybe this gives you a bit more talking points to consider it. But I just think it's important whenever you're talking about nutrition, you need to be able to take that step back. Hey, what objectively is this diet doing? And how does that apply to the person that's sitting in front of me?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to wrap it up, Geordie.
Yeah. So
Cheers.
if you guys like that episode, let us know. In the send us an email, send us a DM on social media. If there's any particular topics you guys want us to talk about to break down, we'll be doing podcast episodes 1 to 2 every single week of the year. I know we took a bit of a hiatus there coming off the back of 2022 into 2023, really, really big building year for us, but we're back 1 to 2 episodes. Anything you want us to talk about, anything you want us to discuss, be sure to send it in. But as always, you guys can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you can catch it on YouTube, and we'll be posting the best snips up on our social media. So make sure that you follow our socials at the underscore fight dietitian. But Dojo Dietitian, first podcast of the year, ticked off. I'll see you next time.